please the court, counsel. I'm Marcy Goldblum on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Patrick Day. In this case, Mr. Day had worked for over 19 years as a construction equipment operator. He suffered a very serious injury, actually made worse by the fact that he was on blood thinners because he'd suffered a heart attack several months before. He ended up having surgery, and after the surgery, he had a bleeding artery that required even more surgery. The doctor who performed the initial surgery thought that he was doing well, but he continued to complain of pain. He was eventually sent to a pain clinic, and he was found to have injury to the saphenous nerve. And he's continued throughout this record to complain of very severe pain, swelling, depression. This court needs to remand this case for several reasons. The administrative law judge in this case, number one, and I think most egregiously, completely ignored a functional capacity evaluation that was performed on June 20th, 2006, and it was performed by physical therapists at the industrial rehab program at the Mike Bluff Medical Center. The fact that the administrative law judge completely ignored that functional capacity evaluation is in itself reason to remand. The functional capacity evaluation is significant. It showed, among other things, that walking, balancing, were limited to only 1 to 5% of an 8-hour day. That turns out to be 24 minutes out of an 8-hour day that this man can balance, walk. Now, it's interesting that the administrative law judge, in his RFC finding, says that this man can stand for up to 30 minutes at one time. That's inconsistent with this functional capacity evaluation. And not only that, it's inconsistent with sedentary work. What's very, very troubling is that the administrative law judge goes on to reject the opinion of the treating physicians. And in rejecting the opinion of the treating physicians, he says that they're not supported by consistent evidence, they're internally inconsistent. But in so doing, the administrative law judge never once cites to the functional capacity evaluation that was done by the physical therapists. So it wasn't just the doctor who was saying, I think he can do this or I think he can do that, but the functional capacity evaluation says that he's limited to 5 pounds. That was something that, in his second opinion, Dr. Jarvis limits him to 5 pounds, and the ALJ, in rejecting Dr. Jarvis's opinion, says, I don't see any evidence to support that, but again, never once cites the functional capacity evaluation. There's other things in the decision that are also quite troubling. In affirming the decision, one of the first things that the district court notes is that there's pain and swelling in this gentleman's leg. And, of course, the underlying medical condition certainly supports that there's a tremendous amount of pain and swelling. Swelling is noted throughout the medical records. And Mr. Day testified and put into his forms that he needs to elevate his leg when he's sitting. The administrative law judge never specifically deals with that limitation. Now, the administrative law judge does say that he's discounting the claimant's credibility, and he says that this is because basically his daily activities are consistent with the performance of sedentary work. And I have to say, I think the administrative law judge's credibility finding, first of all, does not comport with Social Security ruling 96.7P, but also it does something that this court has said time and time again not to do. The administrative law judge looks at activities that this gentleman performs, and we're certainly not saying that he can't do that, but he doesn't look at how these things are performed. The administrative law judge, among other things, looked at the forms that this gentleman filled out, particularly at the beginning part of his claim, and said, well, he says he washes some dishes, he says that he makes limited meals, he tries to go swimming. But what he also says is that if the weather's bad or his leg is particularly painful, he can't even wear pants. He says that...
That would handicap you, I would suggest.
You know, I would think so, Your Honor. It makes it difficult to go to work, certainly. He also says that he has divided his chores up. So again, when the administrative law judge is saying that his daily activities support his ability to do this range of sedentary work, he's not complying with the regulations in terms of looking at how this gentleman is doing his daily activities. And in addition, again...
I mean, he used his kids, didn't he, to help him do some of those activities
for his
children?
He did. His kids came over, I think, every other weekend. They were, I think, 7 and 10 at the time, and they would help him do things that he wasn't able to do. Again, Social Security has, and our case law has made it pretty clear that because an individual is able to do things on an intermittent basis, particularly take care of a small household, doing things at their own pace, that's not the same thing as being able to sustain substantial gainful activity, even at the sedentary level. And we are looking at, because there's no question, nobody's saying this gentleman can be on his feet for very long, but as I said, it's troubling that the administrative law judge finds that this gentleman can be on his feet for 30 minutes at a time when that's inconsistent with the functional capacity evaluation that he never once refers to. And there's other troubling aspects. The administrative law judge finds in the body of the opinion that there are moderate limitations on concentration, persistence, and pace. Now, the government has argued various things in terms of what that's based on and what the testimony says, what the different records say, but the bottom line is the administrative law judge, in his decision, finds moderate limitations on concentration, persistence, and pace. But the problem is that in his RFC assessment, he fails to explain how those limitations that he found translate into an RFC for, quote, limited but satisfactory ability to maintain concentration and attention, understand, remember, and carry out detailed instructions, and demonstrate reliability. There seems to be a disconnect between moderate limitations on concentration, persistence, and pace and what the ALJ puts into his RFC findings and the hypothetical that he proffered to the vocational expert. And there's no explanation of how he made the jump from moderate limitations on one hand to what he puts into the RFC. That's legal error, and that goes against what the court said in Young. And it also, there's an implication, I think, in the defendant's brief and in the district court's opinion that seems to indicate that, well, the ALJ essentially limited him to unskilled, but this court's Kraft decision, I think, makes pretty clear that moderate deficiencies in concentration, persistence, and pace are not the equivalent of unskilled work. So again, this is something that needs to be remanded so that moderate deficiencies in concentration, persistence, and pace can actually be input into the RFC, into a question to the vocational expert, in a way that makes sense and has a rational connection to what the ALJ specifically found.
You're into rebuttal time.
Excuse me?
You're into your rebuttal
time. Well, then in that case, I will save that, and thank you.
Mr. Schultz.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. Gary Seltz on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security, Michael Astru. As the court is aware, Congress has provided that judicial review in these cases is governed by the substantial evidence standard. And under that standard, a finding may be supported by substantial evidence, even if it's supported by less than a preponderance of the evidence. Now, counsel this morning has certainly cited some evidence which is contrary to the ALJ's decision. The ALJ acknowledged that there was some evidence contrary to his decision. However, the ALJ's decision in this case is supported not just by substantial evidence, it's supported by the weight of the evidence in this record.
Why don't you address the functional capacity evaluation that counsel hangs her hat on?
Sure.
That's a significant issue.
Some of the statements that counsel has made about the functional capacities evaluation I don't believe are accurate. In fact, the functional capacities evaluation is at least very largely consistent with the ALJ's own findings. The ALJ found that Day could perform a limited range of sedentary work, which by definition involves sitting for most of the day, and it involves lifting no more than 10 pounds, and frequent lifting would be even of lesser weights than that. Now, the functional capacity evaluation form, which is report, is on pages 210 through 212 of the record. It specifically says that Mr. Day could sit between 67 and 100% of the workday, of an 8-hour workday, which is the largest amount, the largest category on the form. Now, it does indicate that he could only walk between 1 and 5% of the workday. And counsel has said that amounts to 24 minutes. I think it's important to note that Day himself said that he walked 5 blocks, I think fairly regularly. So his own testimony indicates that he can do a fair amount of walking. And in addition, with respect to standing, the functional capacities evaluation says his standing tolerance is between 34 and 66% of a workday. That ought to be more than sufficient to do the relatively small amount of standing that sedentary work requires. And the ALJ here, in this case, also specifically said that he was limited to standing for 30 minutes at a time, which is, I think, very close to what Day himself testified at the hearing. I think he said 25 minutes at a time at the hearing. Now, with respect to lifting...
Well, let me go back to this, his walking. Sure. Didn't he testify that he was barely able to walk 5 blocks without having to stop because his lower right leg would begin to swell? So as a consequence, yeah, he might have the capacity to go five blocks, but there was a significant price he paid in terms of swelling of the leg and having to put the leg up.
Judge Williams says, I recall what the record says. It reflected that he could walk 5 blocks, and he would basically have to stop after walking 5 blocks because he would start to experience the sort of symptoms you're talking about. But I do think, I mean, I think the reason he was walking is that he was being encouraged by his doctors to walk. I know that the OJ cited one medical report which contained the language ambulate, because I think his doctors were encouraging him to be active and to walk to the extent he could. And again, the ALJ is not finding that he can do a lot of standing and walking. The ALJ found him limited to sedentary work. I think clearly the record does not indicate he could do a job and it would involve extensive standing and walking like he did before. But it was entirely reasonable for the ALJ to find that he could do the relatively small amount of standing and walking that sedentary work requires. With respect to lifting, I believe counsel said that the functional capacities evaluation report said he was limited to lifting 5 pounds. I don't think that's what it says. I think when I look at the report, it indicates... it talks about various sorts of lifting and carrying, for floor-to-waist lifting and waist-to-overhead lifting. It says he can lift 10 pounds between 34 and 66% of the workday. It says he can lift 5 pounds between 67 and 100% of the workday. I think those findings are very consistent with sedentary work. It also talks about carrying with both the right and left hand. says he can do those activities, can carry with either hand 10 pounds between 34 and 66% of the workday, 5 pounds between 67 and 100% of the workday. I think this functional evaluation report is very much consistent with the ALJ's decision.
Well, what about this comment by the ALJ that he couldn't understand the connection that Jarvis drew between Day's leg injury and his inability to lift more than 5 pounds? Is that a basis that he should reject Jarvis's opinion because he couldn't understand the connection?
Well, I think
rather than trying to get more information if he didn't understand the evidence? And the connection?
I think there are a number of reasons why it was reasonable for the ALJ to give little weight to that piece of Dr. Jarvis's opinion. I think it was reasonable for the ALJ to say that a lower leg impairment, which is the primary impairment that Day has, would not limit his lifting ability to that degree. The ALJ found him limited to lifting 10 pounds maximum, but I don't believe, I mean, I think that there are a number of other opinions, none of whom reflect a 5 pound maximum lifting limitation. I think that Mr. Day himself did not claim that he was limited in lifting to that degree. So I think that I believe the district court found that that was a persuasive basis for questioning Dr. Jarvis's opinion, and the ALJ was reasonable in drawing that inference. Now, I just want to talk briefly about, if I have time, about some of the other opinions in the record. Counsel, I believe, made the assertion that the ALJ rejected the opinions of the treating physicians. Well, what the ALJ did was reject opinions from certain treating physicians. He relied upon opinions from other treating physicians, and actually the physicians that he relied on were treating specialists to a large extent, Dr. Schwartz and Dr. Bacania, both of whom indicated that he could perform sedentary types of work, and neither of whom suggested that he was limited to part-time work, as some of the opinions that Day is relying upon reflect. Dr. Schwartz offered a number of opinions regarding Mr. Day's ability to work, and she was rather clear that she believed that he could work. Dr. Bacania, a treating neurologist, also said that he thought that Day could perform a sedentary job. That conclusion is also supported by Dr. Novum, an examining neurologist. It's supported by Drs. Liu and Foster, two of the two state agency physicians who reviewed the record in this case. So this is a case in which the ALJ did not credit all of the treating physician opinions, but he by no means rejected them all. And his decision that Day could perform sedentary work is certainly supported by substantial evidence. Now, I have, in my final minute, let me just try to quickly address the mental impairment question. The ALJ in this case very reasonably found that Mr. Day, despite his mental impairments and despite some limitations, could perform satisfactorily in all areas of work-related functioning. The record indicates that Day had a significant problem with depression in the fall of 2006 when his wife left him. And I guess my time is up. If I can just conclude with one sentence, I'd just say that there is no medical evidence of any mental limitations that are greater than what the ALJ found. None at all. Thank you very much.
I want to address a few points. Number one, Dr. Schwartz, who both the ALJ and government seem to focus on, issued her opinion before it was discovered that he had the saphenous nerve injury. So in a sense, when she's saying, well, what I did has healed, he can go back to work, I don't think that can be the basis of a finding for anything, really. And then Dr. Begonia, who indicates that he should have some vocational rehab and kind of suggests that when the pain is under better control, he should be able to get to sedentary work. But he's not, the opinion isn't that he's there right now. I think they're being hopeful, though. And in terms of the ambulate, that is found in one place in the record. This gentleman, when the vein in the leg had gotten really big and swollen, and he went over to the Vein Clinics of America, tried to get some treatment from the Vein Clinic of America, and actually it didn't work because the compression that they were trying to use was too painful for him to be able to continue with. On the first discharge note from Vein Clinics of America, they said ambulate. That's the only time that's said there. But in fact, a lot of what he did, the swimming, trying to walk, that was part of his rehabilitation. And just as this court held in Carradine, that should not be held against him. When you look this over, we're going to ask that you remand because there are substantial problems with the decision. Thank you very much.
And this case will be taken under advisement.